Big news! Wayfair's end of season sale is here. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair. Plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on home finds in every style. This is your last chance to score end of season savings, and it's happening now. Did we mention fast shipping on everything? Don't wait. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off now through September 2nd.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Have you ever met a real psychopath in real life? Story one. This happened last semester when I was finishing the 10th grade. I am a teenage girl with almost no enemies, which makes this story even stranger. I am still nervous to tell it because of the person it involves, but I will just hope it never gets back to them. It all began in my science class on the first day when my teacher created the seating plan. Unfortunately, he was one of those teachers who didn't want us sitting with our friends. He believed this would help us meet new people, but trust me, there are some people you really don't want to meet. I was seated next to a boy I had never seen before named Al. Right away, I got an odd feeling from him, so I tried to focus on my worksheet to avoid conversation. It may sound rude, but in that quiet classroom, it was not unusual to skip introductions. He seemed to have no social skills, appeared awkward, and did not seem to take care of himself. Even though I sat at least a foot away, I could smell his very bad breath. Apparently, many others avoided introducing themselves too, and the whole room filled with silence until my teacher stood up and told us to shake hands with our partners. Great. Now I had to talk to him. We shook hands and his hand was extremely sweaty, lingering far too long. I hoped the conversation would end there, but of course it didn't. After a moment of silence, I noticed him staring directly at me. When I looked back, he asked awkwardly what kind of music I liked. I answered, returned the question politely, and then he said in the most monotone voice, "I really love Nicki Minaj. She is the most beautiful woman ever." At first I laughed, thinking he was joking, but he was serious. He admitted later that he didn't even like her music much. He just liked her appearance. This wasn't the creepiest part, but it adds context. He then talked about his classes, focusing on Spanish. When I asked why, he stared straight at me and said, "Ms. Johnson is the hottest teacher I have ever seen. I love her so much." I awkwardly replied that I had heard she was nice, but then he leaned in and said in the strangest tone, "Yeah, and she's thick. I like them thick." I tried to brush it off with a safe comment, but unexpectedly he exploded with anger about another teacher, Mr. Jones, calling him terrible. Mr. Jones was actually well-liked, but Al seemed to have hated him after taking his English class. I played along, pretending to agree, because I was intimidated and didn't want to cause a scene. From then on, he talked to me almost constantly. I gave short answers, hoping he would stop, but he never did. He told me personal, inappropriate details about his life, even showing me pictures of a foot fungus. I was disgusted, but too afraid to object. Then one day he said with a blank stare, "I planned on killing Mr. Jones. I wanted him dead. The only thing that stopped me was the law, but maybe someday I will find a way around it." I was horrified but stayed calm and said he wouldn't want to risk jail. I considered telling a teacher or counselor, but I feared he would know it was me and come after me instead. My friends told me he wasn't joking and that I should report it if he threatened again. Things only got worse. He asked me random disturbing questions, including what my stage name would be if I were a dancer, and spoke often about revenge. During labs, he yelled at me for turning on the gas and called me stupid. During a lesson on cows and the carbon cycle, when the teacher made a lighthearted joke, Al loudly blurted, "I inhale deeply and say, mmm," leaving the whole class laughing except him and me. He then spent the next hour telling me about his disturbing obsession with disgusting things, even boasting that he sometimes purposely touched other people's belongings afterward. I tried to hide my discomfort, but when I sarcastically said cool, he blew up at me in front of the class. I quickly apologized to calm him down. Another time he walked in late and furious, telling me, "I hate everybody in this school. I wish I could come in with a gun and just shoot everyone, and then myself afterwards." I was terrified but didn't dare tell anyone beyond a few close friends. Every day I worried he might pull something out of his oversized bag. Fortunately, the semester ended without tragedy, though he harassed and scared many. There were incidents with the Spanish teacher, where he was eventually blocked from her class, and with the class peer tutor, whom he first threatened violently and then later made inappropriate comments to. He even told me he liked messing with him and planned something bizarre. Honestly, he is the creepiest person I have ever met. Story 2. This happened in October 2019. I just came across the photos on my phone, but I am unsure if I should upload them. It was a weekend, and I thought it would be a good idea to go out of town for the day and introduce my girlfriend to my mom for the first time. My mom lives out on the plains on 40 acres. The house and land sit a quarter mile off the road, down a driveway that runs between two neighbors' fields. We arrived around noon, and my brother and his wife happened to be visiting that day as well. So I introduced my girlfriend to everyone and to all the dogs. I noticed that the loudest and most obnoxious dog, the beagle, didn't come to greet us. My mom explained that the night before, she had gone outside to grab something from the truck, and the dog darted out the door into the field. He never came back. This wasn't too unusual, as sometimes dogs ran off for a couple of days before returning. Later that day, my mom recalled that around 1 a.m, she and my nieces had been woken up by all the dogs howling and barking nonstop until they eventually quieted down. We went about our day, enjoying the quiet, until we noticed a hawk circling the same area in the field again and again. My brother and his wife went to check it out while I busied myself with something else. A few minutes later, my brother returned and told me he had found the missing beagle, but something was wrong and I should see it before telling mom. I followed him into the field, expecting to find the dog dead. On the way, I saw a spot of blood and assumed it was coyotes. He showed me a blood trail that led to a larger puddle and then to another trail, where the dog appeared to have been dragged. The trail ended where the dog lay. The scene immediately felt wrong. The plants around him were trampled, and he looked different. When I got closer, I realized he was missing his skin. This wasn't just a few injuries from a fight or scavenger birds. The only fur and skin left on him was his head, tail, and paws, with very distinct straight lines where the rest had been removed. Someone had deliberately killed and skinned our dog in the middle of the night, just a couple hundred feet from the front door. We called the police, who took 2 hours to arrive. We took pictures and searched the area. We noticed tire tracks, but could not tell how old they were. We also found a pile of fresh horse manure nearby, which made us wonder if whoever did this had ridden in on horseback. To this day, the police have never followed up, and nothing else has happened. We installed cameras and mended the fences so the dogs can't get out, but we still have no idea who was responsible. I still have the pictures on my phone and can't bring myself to delete them. Story 3. We started dating 18 months ago. I ignored the red flags. Psychopaths have a pattern when imitating their victims. They say, "I like you, I am the same as you, you can trust me, and I am the perfect partner." He overwhelmed me with affection, and I was flattered. He was so good-looking and charming that everyone loved him, even my sisters. People commented on how happy I seemed and how good of a match it was, but he had strained relationships with his parents, his sister, and an ex-girlfriend. He told me he had prior charges for selling marijuana and had spent time in and out of probation. My sister once remarked on something unsettling about his eyes. A friend's girlfriend even tried to give an ultimatum that it was either her or him, which didn't work, but she clearly saw something before I did. The overwhelming affection consumed me. He began isolating me from my friends and family, insisting he wanted more time with me. I thought it was love, and I convinced myself I felt the same. Soon he started picking fights, keeping me up with endless arguments. Nothing I did was ever enough, though I gave everything. Once he held me down and screamed in my face to listen. I should have left then, but the abuse was scattered among moments of affection and gaslighting. We already had strong momentum. He was going to move in. We spent my money on wedding plans and furniture. The very first day he moved in, he accused me of not listening and screamed at me that night. I told him he couldn't live like that, And though things would sometimes calm down, they always escalated again. He claimed he was just defending himself and warned it would keep happening. He was financially, physically, emotionally, and surely abusive. I realized too late that the tens of thousands of dollars in debt we had accumulated was all in my name. When he punched a hole in the wall and then bought me flowers afterward, I started planning my escape. I had to prepare documents, get my job in order, and secure other things before I could leave. It took 6 months. In that time, he worsened, and I became like a walking zombie. Once he screamed at me through an entire freeway drive, blasting the music at full volume, then stopped and told me to get out. Another time, he chased me through a mall, yelling my name. He kept me from leaving my own home multiple times. Toward the end, he called me degrading names and laughed while I cried on the floor. I had never seen anyone act with such cruelty. When he finally moved out, I realized the truth.
Wayfair's Labor Day clearance is here. Right now, score up to 70% off everything home, plus fast shipping on everything right to your door. Shop now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
He was estranged from his family, not because of them, but because of him. He had been incarcerated because of his own actions. I began to see signs of antisocial personality disorder, but he was still so charming, good-looking, and manipulative that nobody outside the relationship knew what he really was. I read Robert Hare, Women Who Love Psychopaths, Whole Again, and other books. I stopped drinking since he left. I even found a $250-an-hour therapist. I recognized the weaknesses in myself that allowed this, but I needed to share this as both a release and a warning to others. Story 4. A few years ago, while I was still in university, I was in a serious relationship with a guy I thought was perfect for me. My parents liked him, he got along with all my friends, and I genuinely felt like the luckiest girl alive. He was on an exchange semester in my city, and about 5 to 6 months into the relationship, he suggested transferring to my university. I thought that was wonderful and even helped him with his application. A few months later, he extended his exchange semester, and by then we were closer than ever, even living together. One day while I was at my summer internship, he forwarded me an email saying he had been accepted into my university. I was overjoyed, and my friends were thrilled too. It felt like a fairy tale. We started looking for apartments and making arrangements for his move. A few weeks before classes began, he flew back home to visit his parents, and I did the same, planning to return together in 2 weeks. When I came back, he didn't. He told me his father was really sick and he needed to stay a bit longer. I didn't question it, but a few weeks later he said the university had emailed him, telling him he had to start next semester since he had missed the first few weeks. It seemed strange, but he forwarded the emails, so I had no reason to doubt him. Even though he wasn't attending classes, he visited me every month, and things felt normal. Then the next semester began. He missed the first week again, claiming he was very sick but would fly in the following week. He sent me his flight tickets, his lease contract, and his student visa documents. I had no reason to think they were fake. When he finally sent me photos of himself boarding a flight, I was so excited that I went to wait for him outside his apartment once the plane landed. But hours passed, and he never showed up. When I asked where he was, he said the airport wouldn't let him leave because his visa had expired and he had to fly back home. My roommate went to the university office to find out what happened, but they said there were no records of him ever being a student there. When I confronted him, he insisted the university had lost his record and told me to wait because his father would come to sort it out. I was confused, but when I checked with his apartment office, I found he had actually paid a $6,000 deposit. That made me believe him. After all, why would anyone throw away that kind of money? Then one day, while looking at his acceptance letter, I noticed his student number looked familiar. I compared it to my own acceptance letter and realized it was identical. That's when it hit me. He had forged all the documents and tricked me and my friends into believing he was enrolled. When I confronted him again, he said he did it all for me and that he would find a way to stay with me. Till this day, I struggle to trust anything a guy says. And if you're reading this, let's please never meet again. Story 5. I apologize for the length, but this is 100% my story and experience. Years ago, I worked at a local casino. Many customers were a little odd, but one man in particular seemed friendly enough after flirting with me, so I agreed to go on a date with him that upcoming weekend. We met on a Saturday at his friend's house for a casual barbecue. Everyone seemed nice. The food was good, but I noticed my date downing an excessive number of Jell-O shots. Later, we all agreed to go to a local bar. My first red flag should have been when he tried to force a kiss on me and shoved his tongue into my mouth. I blamed it on the alcohol at the time, being young and insecure, and brushed it off. At the bar, things were fine until they invited me to another party happening in a few days. I already had other plans, so I politely declined. His mood changed instantly. He became hostile and angry, yelling that I was unfaithful and accusing me of wanting to meet other guys. I was shocked and confused. He continued shouting obscenities, becoming increasingly aggressive. I decided to leave, but he followed me outside to the parking lot, still yelling. As I tried to get into my car, he suddenly grabbed me by the shoulders, shoved me against the side of my car, and put a hand around my neck while screaming more insults. He was trying to choke me. I screamed that he was hurting me and threatened to call the police if he didn't stop. To my surprise, he let go. I jumped in my car and sped off, terrified. The next day at work, I immediately went to the casino's security office, which was run by state troopers, and reported the assault. Since he was a regular customer, I did not want to risk seeing him again. They pulled up his record, and it was shocking. Multiple charges for assault, stalking, and even kidnapping. They blacklisted him, and when he came back a few days later, he was arrested and permanently banned. Unfortunately, I later found out from my female coworkers that they already knew he had a dangerous history, but hadn't told me, saying I would figure it out myself. I felt betrayed and furious. To make matters worse, he began calling and texting me constantly, leaving threatening voicemails for nearly a year. Then, less than 2 weeks later, another coworker was kidnapped by a different casino regular. He had groomed her for 2 whole years before holding her captive in his basement for 3 days. Thankfully, she was rescued and recovered. As soon as I heard what happened, I quit immediately and walked out. I have never gone back and will never set foot in another casino again. Story 6. Recently, I met someone in a Christian group at my college, let's call him Jackie, who seemed extraordinarily nice to me at first. We met when he texted me something casual like, "Let's go to the gym this week." I agreed, and almost immediately he started acting like my best friend. At the time, I didn't realize it, but now I see that he was trying to isolate me from my support network so that he could control the situation. He would say things like, "I've been praying for you this week," or, "You're such a great person. I really appreciate our friendship." He also shared very personal stories under the guise of spiritual growth, such as admitting he had committed crimes in school and sold drugs, using these confessions as examples of forgiveness. He encouraged me to cut off my current friend group, saying I needed new people around me. He would sometimes take me to church alone or offer rides to different events. The biggest red flag came on my birthday. He suggested we meet in a dark, secluded parking lot at 11 o'clock at night, just the two of us, to celebrate. Nothing ended up happening, but looking back, it was an extremely unsettling and suspicious situation. Story 7. I am pretty sure my ex-stepmother was a psychopath. I had known her for as long as I could remember because she had been friends with both of my parents since high school. Unfortunately, my mother struggled with alcoholism and pill addiction, which led to severe neglect when I was young. After missing most of my third grade year, child services got involved and custody was given to my dad, who was dating her at the time. In the beginning, things felt normal. She acted more like an older sister or friend. But soon everything began to change. When I was about 9, I was sitting on the living room floor playing with my back against the couch. She walked past me and deliberately bumped into the doorway. She immediately turned around, yelling and accusing me of pushing her. I was shocked because I hadn't even moved. Still, I began doubting myself, wondering if maybe I had done something without realizing. She was an adult, and I was just a child, so I thought she must know better. She was tall and thin, with long blonde hair, high-waisted jeans, and long red nails that later became a terrifying symbol for me. Over time, her hostility grew, especially whenever I had phone or letter contact with my mom. She claimed those interactions made me misbehave, though I was introverted, studious, and avoided trouble. She seemed to wait for opportunities when we were alone to treat me however she wanted. Mornings became military-style routines. She would rip the covers off me or grab my feet, twisting my toes with her nails to wake me. I had to follow her exact minute-by-minute schedule or face punishment. Finger twisting, painful pinches, heels grinding into my feet, even hairbrushes broken across my face. If the bruises were too visible, she would pretend I was sick and keep me home from school. Her cruelty extended into meals in public places. At dinner, she dug her toenails into my shins under the table until skin was scraped raw. At church, she pinched me so hard on the back that she left bruises hidden under my clothes. After school, I was forced to entertain her daughter exactly as she demanded. If I didn't comply, she would unleash her rage. Once, when her daughter tattled over something trivial, she dragged me down the hall by my hair and beat me with a belt until I was covered in bruises. And if I cried out, she hit harder. She also mocked me in ways that seemed playful to others, but were filled with malice. At family dinners, she would laugh and call me names about how I chewed, glaring at me when my dad wasn't looking. She mocked the way I walked, once kicking me in the knees until I fell, and then kicking me in the back, knocking the wind out of me. Teachers eventually noticed my bruises and swollen fingers and questioned my parents. She put on an act, crying and insisting she would never hurt me. I was transferred to another school, but the abuse only escalated. As I grew older, she became increasingly controlling. Friendships were restricted, and I was made to dress in ways that concealed me. When she noticed I was changing, her reactions became harsh, sometimes crossing painful lines. A relative eventually noticed signs of mistreatment and threatened to speak up. After that, I began spending more time away from home and slowly found the courage to distance myself. When I was 16, she cornered me in the kitchen for being slightly behind schedule and pressed a fork to my throat, hissing threats into my ear. I will never forget the chill of the metal prongs against my skin. My breaking point came during my junior year. I wore an outfit her sister-in-law had given me, a striped shirt and long shorts. It was completely appropriate, but she flew into a rage and clawed my arms with her nails. I finally snapped, shoved her off me, grabbed the phone, and told her that if she touched me again, I would call the police. For the first time, she looked afraid. I laughed and told her she was scared. Her expression went blank as she warned me coldly that if she had to make my dad choose, it would never be me. I packed my bag that day and left, spending the summer with her sister-in-law before moving in with my grandmother. She did not stop me, only made sure I knew I wasn't welcome back. Years later, after she had left my dad for someone else, we briefly spoke online. When I confronted her about everything, she dismissed it all with, "I'm sorry if you ever felt unloved. I was just really stressed, and you were a pretty rebellious kid." That was her only explanation for years of cruelty. Story 8. My former best friend might be a psychopath. I had been friends with him for a little over 3 years. When I first met him, I thought he was hilarious, kind, intelligent, and overall a really interesting person. Everyone thought that of him. He was loved by his peers and well-known in the community. That detail is important. We only became true best friends a few months into our friendship, after one day when we were joking around and connected in a way I had never experienced before. We laughed until we couldn't breathe, and it felt amazing. When I first met him, his ex-girlfriend actually warned me about him. I was close to her, but I didn't believe what she said. I thought she was just a bitter ex. She told me that he went far past her boundaries, was unusually cruel at times, and once tried to drown her by holding her underwater again and again when they were swimming. I dismissed it as exaggeration, but looking back, I wish I hadn't. Later, he bragged to me about relentlessly bullying a kid in high school. He claimed he tried to push the kid into suicide and gave up only when the boy harmed himself but didn't go through with it. He laughed as he told me this, finding it funny. I had never seen him that cruel before, and it disturbed me deeply. Another time, we went hiking on a busy trail. He fixated on one woman there, constantly commenting on how gorgeous she was, even though she was clearly with her partner. Afterwards, when we went out to eat, the conversation drifted into Sewell topics. At first, it seemed normal, until he revealed his darker fantasies. He admitted he fantasized about kidnapping, hurting, and even murdering a woman. He described it in disturbing detail, including what he would do afterward, and mentioned horrifying acts I won't repeat here. Once we finished eating, he kept joking about going back to that woman we saw on the trail, but it was obvious he wasn't joking at all. It felt more like he was testing whether I'd agree. After that day, I distanced myself from him, and as we both got busy with new jobs, we drifted apart. I thought I was free of him until I went to a party one night and he showed up. Just like I mentioned earlier, everyone still loved him. He was active in the community, went to church, and had a new job that made him look even more respectable. He told me he had joined the local police department. I was stunned. He had always said he wanted to go into law enforcement, but hearing it made me uneasy. Maybe he wanted to help people, or maybe it was the perfect cover for who he really was. At first, when we reconnected, he seemed normal again. He was charming, kind, convincing, so much so that even I started to believe he had changed. But then small things slipped through. He spoke of his cousin's death with complete coldness, showing no sadness at all. He talked about his girlfriend like she was just an accessory. He admitted to abusing his dog when he was younger, even killing other animals. He once bragged about kidnapping a S worker and scaring her. Whenever I pressed him on what scaring meant, he became hostile and refused to elaborate, which was strange because normally he loved giving every detail. On New Year's Eve, everything came to a breaking point. We were at a bar, and he got into a fight. He beat the man so badly that he was choking on his own blood, and he didn't stop until I yelled that the man could die. I tried to pull him off, but he was much stronger. When he finally turned to me, his face was blank, emotionless. Then, as if nothing had happened, he casually resumed his conversation like it was just another night. That was the moment I realized he was far more dangerous than I had ever wanted to believe. I reported him anonymously to the police, but I have not heard anything back. Given his connections and his position, I don't know if anything will ever come of it. What I do know is this. I am convinced he is a psychopath, or something very close to it. Story 9. There's only one person I have met in my life that I am absolutely certain was a psychopath, and she was a 10-year-old girl. The summer after I graduated college, I was living in a house in Berkeley with a few PhD students. It wasn't the best neighborhood, but not the worst either. Families lived nearby, including a woman and her daughter in the house next door. The house looked normal enough, but every so often, police cars or ambulances would show up. We didn't question it much since police presence wasn't unusual in the area, and we only ever saw the girl and her mom, so nothing seemed overly alarming. One afternoon after my roommates and I had just finished smoking in the backyard, there was a knock at the door. When I opened it, the mother from next door stood there, visibly shaking. She said, "I really don't want to have to call the police, but I don't know what to do. I just need another adult to be there." My roommate Sean and I immediately agreed to go with her, even though we were stunned that she was desperate enough to ask for our help. When we reached her house, she explained that her daughter had issues and was currently standing on the roof, threatening to drop her mom's work computer or jump herself. Sure enough, we looked up and saw the girl dangling a MacBook over the side, chanting in a disturbing sing-song voice, "Look, Mommy, no hands! No hands, Mommy!" It was chilling, like something straight out of a horror movie. She wasn't distressed. She was enjoying tormenting her mother. The mom explained her daughter had been in therapy and under psychiatric care, but nothing seemed to help. Police had been called before, but she didn't want to put her child through being restrained and hospitalized again. Exhausted and terrified, she turned to us for help. I tried talking to the girl, making up a story about how I used to climb roofs, then got into rock climbing, and how dangerous she was being. I told her I could even show her our pet geckos that climb walls if she came down safely. At first she ignored me, still taunting her mother, but eventually she seemed bored with the game and climbed back inside through the window. Moments later she ran down the stairs, stood before us, and in the same unnerving sing-song voice said, "I dropped your computer on the roof and now it's broken. I'm sorry, Mommy. Do you forgive me?" It was chillingly fake. No real remorse, just manipulation. The mother was shaken to the core, so I offered to retrieve the laptop from the roof. She agreed, and while I climbed out to get it, the girl glared at me, repeatedly ordering me to leave her house. I ignored her and brought the laptop back, which surprisingly wasn't damaged. The mom explained the whole episode had started because she had changed her laptop password after her daughter stole her credit card and ordered over $2,000 worth of items online. This girl was only 10 years old. Things had escalated so badly that the girl's younger sibling was moved to live with their father in another apartment because they feared for his safety. The mom, crying, told me they had tried everything but were at their wits' end. I gave her my phone number in case she needed help again. Sean and I left, shaken by the entire experience. She never reached out, and we moved out a few months later. That 10-year-old girl remains the only person I have met in my life who I am convinced had no empathy whatsoever, and it was terrifying. Storyten. I hooked up with someone who turned out to be a psychopath. I had this casual friend with benefits I would see from time to time. His mental health had been declining lately, but he had never been bad with me before. Our previous encounters were completely normal. Then the other night, I went over to his place. At first, he started giving me a massage. But as he did, he kept wrapping his hands around my neck, squeezing tighter and tighter each time. I moved his hands away, starting to feel freaked out. But he did it again and again until I finally pushed his whole body away and told him to chill. We had never agreed to anything rough, so this came completely out of nowhere. Later, while watching a movie, things got heated again, but this time he tried to forcefully take off my top. I had to fight him off several times, holding it down until I eventually yelled at him to stop. Throughout the night, he kept trying to force kisses, grab me without my consent, and claimed I was his. I had known him for a while and thought he was respectable, but clearly I was wrong. The last straw was when he pinned me down, forced his tongue in my mouth, and again tried to choke me. That was when I panicked, shoved him off, and told him I was leaving. I reminded him I had a gun with me, and only then did he finally back off, actually kicking me out of his house. The next day, when I confronted him over text, he claimed he didn't remember any of it. He hadn't been drinking or using drugs, so I have no idea what caused him to act that way. What scares me most is the thought of what he might do to the next woman he meets. Story 11. I found my dad's old note, and now I think he might be a psychopath. I am 23 years old, living with my mom, who is 48, and my dad, who is 59. Today, while using his laptop, I stumbled across a notepad file that made me physically sick. It read like a journal or even a manifesto. To summarize, he has been cheating on my mom since I was in high school. Not just once, but weekly, with new women each time. Many of the names I even recognized. My dad always told me my mom was his first and only partner, but in this file, he bragged about being with dozens of women since his 20s. That alone was painful enough to read, but it got worse. He described enjoying hurting women emotionally, saying he did it just to watch their reactions. He was proud of it. Reading those words made me feel like my entire life had been a lie. I don't know if I should tell my mom or pretend I never saw it. There was much more written, things too explicit and personal to share here. But some of it truly frightened me. I feel sick, betrayed, and uncertain about what to do next. Story 12. My dad might be a psychopath. I am 18 years old in my first year of college and created this account just to get this off my chest since I have no one in my life I feel I can tell. On the surface, my dad looks like a loving, hardworking man. He works long 12-hour shifts with constant overtime, provides for us, and to the outside world, he is funny, friendly, and well-liked. But at home, it is a very different story. Growing up, my dad was strict. Bedtimes, homework, no socializing beyond school. But he wasn't just strict, he had bizarre rules. For example, even now that I am legally an adult, if I don't walk all the way to the basement where he stays to offer him a bite of whatever I'm eating, I face consequences. When I was a child, punishments were constant. Beatings, electronics taken away, and emotional pressure. Once when I was 10 and my brother was 8, he accused us of ditching him because we put our swimming bags in a different locker than his. He forced us to explain ourselves and hit our hands with a wooden spoon until we cried. He convinced himself that two children were rejecting him. That fear he instilled in me never left. Anytime he raised his voice, I would instantly go timid, apologetic, and tearful. My brother sometimes pushed back against him and always lost, usually punished harshly. I never had the courage to side with my brother or even my mom during arguments, even when I knew they were right, because I feared my dad's anger. He has strained relationships with nearly everyone, my grandparents, his sister, even my mom. And yet, he places immense weight on his relationship with me and my brother, constantly saying he feels like we don't care about him enough. That fear of losing us seems to drive his control, but it also makes him explosive. The events of last night finally broke me. After a long day of classes and work, I accidentally left the basement door open. Minutes later, he texted me in all caps, "Shut the goddamn door! Now!" My heart raced as I rushed to close it, only to find him waiting at the bottom of the stairs, glaring. "I apologized," he muttered. "You better be," and I thought that was the end of it. Hours later, just before midnight, as I went to bed, he stopped me and accused me of having no manners because if my mom hadn't been talking to him, he would have already gone to sleep and I would have missed saying goodnight to him. I explained that with school and work, I was busy and exhausted, but he refused to accept it. He told me I don't spend time with him, that I use him, and that my actions are damaging our relationship. He locked my bank card, he controls all of my money, and threatened that when it came time to buy a new house, I would be excluded if I didn't care more about him. I sat there for 20 minutes, torn between finally speaking up or swallowing my feelings like I always do. In the end, I apologized, promised to try harder, and he told me, "That isn't good enough." He said I had wasted his time by staying up later, just to hear that. I went to my room and cried like I always did as a child. I am drowning in stress from school already, struggling in biology, working part-time, and trying to hold everything together, and his behavior is crushing me further. He once took away my phone for an entire year because I didn't get straight A's. He constantly piles demands on me until I collapse under the weight. Reading this back, I realize how damaging it all is. My dad has even threatened to beat the shot out of me and my brother, and once told my brother he would leave him on the street. He is terrified of losing us, yet treats us in ways that push us away. I don't even know if he cares, or if control is all that matters to him. I don't know how to stand up to him, and I fear that the confrontation isn't over. All I know is that I feel trapped, and I am unsure how much longer I can carry this without breaking. Story 13. I am a psychopath, and I just became a father. I have a girlfriend, though I do not love her, and now a child who feels to me like just another person. I don't care if you think this is fake or not. I just needed to write it somewhere. People will probably ask why I even have a girlfriend if I don't love her. The truth is, she loves me. I don't feel emotions the way she does, but I learned what happiness, sadness, and anger look like from my family. They raised me to understand emotions even if I don't feel them myself, so I know how to act as though I care. She feels happy when she is with me, and I keep the relationship because of that and because of S. To me, she is someone I can sleep with, and honestly, I think I am a S addict. Since I was 16, I have had many flings. When I turned 18, I didn't care about anything except that my partners were legal adults. I met my girlfriend on my 21st birthday. I know the social rules of relationships and that you aren't supposed to sleep with others, so I stayed with her. Another likely question is whether I am diagnosed. I am not, and no one in my life knows that I don't feel emotions. A third question is whether I have ever wanted to be violent. I haven't. I know some people with psychopathic traits enjoy hurting others, but that has never interested me. I simply don't care about people in the way they care about me. Now that I am a father, I know I have to provide for the child my girlfriend gave birth to. I am willing to marry her because she is helpful and good to me, especially Shuli. If I had to list the few people I like, she would be on that list. Story 14. I finally realized that my dad is just a psychopath. For the last year, I've been living with my parents, and my dad has been manipulative, intimidating, and spirit-crushing. For a long time, I thought there must be some core of empathy in him, something that made him want to be a good person, but I've finally accepted that there is nothing there. The strange part is that I am not even surprised anymore. I'm not angry or sad. It's like I've been pushed too far, too many times, and there is no fight left in me. It's almost a relief because I can stop trying to win him over or hoping he will change. He isn't really my dad to me anymore. He's just a person I live with. I don't think I'm in danger, but finding a new place to live has been difficult. For now, I just keep looking. Sometimes I feel tempted to drink just to take the edge off, but I know the real solution is to focus on my health and try to build connections with other people. I want to start by doing something small, like asking people how their day is. It's a beginning, and that feels like more hope than anything my dad has ever given me. Story 15. This story happened over a couple of years, and even now it makes me anxious to think about. When I was around 15, my mother reconnected with an old crush from her school days named Wayne. Not long after, they started dating. At first, I thought it was cool because I went to school with his son, Brandon, who was my age, and he had two younger kids, James and Allie. I didn't see Wayne much in the beginning since he and my mom spent most of their time together at his place. Not long before Christmas, Wayne called me to ask what I wanted as a gift. I barely knew him at the time, so it struck me as odd, but I assumed he was just trying to make a good impression. Soon he started coming around more, and I couldn't shake the uneasy feeling I had about him. Something about him just set off alarm bells. He eventually moved in with us, and I convinced myself my nerves were just because things were moving too fast. One night while my mom was working at the liquor store, I got into an argument with Wayne. I don't even remember what it was about, probably just teenage attitude. But out of nowhere, he headbutted me. I was stunned and told my mom, but nothing came of it. Eventually, he persuaded her to quit her job, claiming he could support us financially. Then things got truly disturbing. Suddenly, I had a peeping Tom outside my windows at night. Neighbors saw someone peering in, even taking photos, and there were footprints in the snow leading to my room. We called the police, but they could never catch him. Wayne stepped in like a hero, convincing my mom to install an expensive security system and even to get a dog for protection. Later, I would learn the awful truth. Wayne had hired people to spy on me at night. Things escalated into outright abuse. He became violent with my mom, with me, and even with our dog, Coda. I used to hold her and cry, terrified and feeling helpless. One night he came home filthy, with ripped clothes and covered in blood, claiming he had been mugged. Not long after, homicide detectives showed up at our house. Wayne brushed them off and told me it was just routine questioning about a missing neighbor. Later, a body was discovered, and though it was never proven, I am convinced Wayne was involved. We also learned he had a crack addiction, though you wouldn't have guessed it from his appearance. He was a big man, and his size made everything more terrifying. Things came to a breaking point when I heard banging one night during an argument. I ran to find my mom cornered in the bathroom while Wayne was on top of her, beating her. I tried to stop him, but he turned on me, lifted me by the neck, and punched the wall beside my face before letting me go. He then grabbed a sharpened battle axe he had hanging on the wall and chased us through the house. I thought we were going to die. My mom had already tried calling the police earlier in the fight, but they hadn't come. I was on the phone screaming to 911 as we ran. Somehow, Wayne stopped and left before the police arrived. He was eventually caught and charged. We were summoned to testify in court. My mom was too afraid to take the stand, but we still had to appear. Seeing him again was horrifying. In the courthouse, he gave us the most sinister grin I have ever seen. Pure satisfaction, no remorse. Wayne, if I'm ever unlucky enough to see you again, I hope it's from as far away as possible. Story 16. I am so relieved to finally be out of a potentially dangerous living situation with a roommate who honestly could have hurt me without a second thought. From the start, her behavior was unsettling. Before moving in, she randomly demanded I switch rooms with her, then never showed up when she said she would. I eventually got tired of waiting and moved into my assigned room. We were supposed to share a two-bedroom, two-bath unit. When she finally arrived, she immediately started badgering me for my room, arguing that she had a disability and deserved the larger one. She complained about everything in the apartment. Some quick background. She was 39 years old, divorced, unemployed, not in school, and somehow living in student housing. She insisted I follow her rules, no shoes in the apartment and no pork because she was Muslim. When I agreed, she seemed almost disappointed, like she wanted it to be a fight so I would leave. Soon her behavior turned even more bizarre. She threatened to call the police if I ever had guests and bragged about how often she had done that at her previous residence. She went on long discriminatory rants about refugees, international students, and even made racist remarks. She claimed she had been wrongfully evicted before and that housing staff stole her belongings. She stalked them online, screenshotting photos of their families, cars, and homes. She also mentioned a student who had an injunction against her and frequently asked if I knew him or how to find him. Her behavior in the apartment was exhausting. She washed shoes and pillows at 1 a.m, sent me streams of hostile messages whenever I had a guest, and constantly created conflicts. One night I moved a washcloth off the oven handle while I was using the oven, thinking it was a fire hazard. She came pounding on my door at 11 at night, accusing me of touching her property and yelling, "Your mess," at me, even though I hadn't left one. She suggested we use separate garbage bins, but as soon as I lined mine, she started throwing her trash into it. Every night at exactly 10, she disappeared for an hour, then returned wired and overly talkative, launching into hours-long rants. One night, she even asked me if I knew who Jim Jones was. When I said no, she told me he had the right idea. Later, when I Googled who he was, I was horrified. Around the same time, I noticed all my groceries had been tampered with. She had opened every bottle and condiment. I threw them all away. Things escalated further when I went to do laundry in the common area. She had left 2 pairs of pants on top of the washer. I folded them neatly and set them on the dryer so I could start my load. She walked in and immediately began screaming, calling me girl in a demeaning way and yelling that I had touched her property. When I suggested running a cycle while she was gone buying soap, she screamed louder and actually called 911. The police showed up, and she tried to claim I had hit her. After questioning, she admitted I hadn't touched her, but said she didn't like my tone. She then turned on the officers, shouting at them until one told her to shut up. Through her late-night rants, I learned more of her disturbing history. She had been evicted 3 times, even from her own house after a foreclosure. She was already being sued by a housing company for her last eviction, but had filed for bankruptcy to avoid it. She had tried to appeal, but a judge denied it. At one point, police had raided her previous apartment and confiscated her weapons because she had threatened staff. I am beyond grateful that management finally switched me to a new unit, even though student housing was packed at the start of the semester. I still cannot understand why she wasn't evicted, given the mountain of evidence. Police reports, threats, multiple evictions, stalking. All I know is that I am lucky to be out. She was truly dangerous. Story 17. Everyone has had a bad friend or two. I had an epically bad friend. If it hadn't happened to me, I would never have believed that this strange mental disorder was real or that people could behave this way outside of movies. I grew up in northern Indiana. I went to a large high school in the mid-1990s, and during my senior year, I met another student named Hannah, who had recently transferred from a Catholic high school in the area. That was unusual, to transition so late from private to public school. Hannah said she had been expelled after a fight with another student over some drama involving a boy. According to her, the other girl had made allegations and accused her of attacking her. Police had been contacted and a restraining order was placed, which led to her expulsion. That was how I came to know her. Hannah insisted none of it was true. Later, I went to college in Indiana while she went to Florida. One day, a friend of mine from the dorms ran into a guy she had known back in high school. Afterward, my friend told me a strange story. 2 girls had been fighting over this boy, each claiming to be in a secret relationship with him, though neither actually was. The whole situation was bizarre. Then she mentioned one of those girls was named Hannah. The next summer, Hannah and I were both back in our hometown. I hung out with her casually and told her what I'd heard. She said she would tell me what really happened. She admitted she had a crush on that boy, but when she saw him talking to another girl named Julie, she became jealous. Hannah convinced herself that the boy wanted to be her boyfriend, and she believed Julie had said something bad about her. Julie was popular, a cheerleader, and Hannah hated everything about her. So she told me she had decided to push Julie toward a breakdown. I was horrified, but Hannah showed me books she kept hidden in her closet. One was about revenge and dirty tricks. Another had a cartoon on the front and in bold letters, gaslighting. This was back in 1995, before that word became common. I had never heard of it. Hannah explained that gaslighting meant driving someone crazy by making them question what's real. Then she proudly told me what she had done to Julie. She pretended to be her friend, got her phone number, and started making anonymous calls. A boy from her church who had a crush on her agreed to help in exchange for favors. He pretended to be Mike on the phone, and Hannah rewarded him for each call. Fake Mike told Julie to keep their relationship secret. Hannah also put notes in Julie's locker, signed with Mike's name. Fake Mike would make plans at the mall, then never show up. Hannah even made a mixtape with disturbing whispers like, "You should kill yourself" between songs. And when Julie reacted, Hannah sat there stone-faced, pretending she heard nothing. Julie's parents confronted Mike, not knowing he had nothing to do with it. Julie was humiliated at school when everyone thought she was crazy. Hannah said she loved every minute of it, until Julie's parents checked their phone bill and discovered the calls had come from Hannah's house. Julie confronted her, and something physical happened in a stairwell. Julie claimed Hannah tried to push her over the railing. Hannah denied it, saying it was just an accident, but she was expelled. She didn't seem ashamed. She was proud, only upset she got caught. That summer, Hannah started dating a guy named Derek. She constantly bragged about their secret relationship, but at a party, he shouted at her to leave him and his girlfriend alone. He had traced strange calls back to Hannah's number. She admitted she'd been trying to break them up, but claimed she overplayed it. Later, when Hannah was depressed over Derek, I took her out to a bar. She flirted with a much older man, and soon I realized she was paying strangers to make anonymous harassing calls to people she disliked. She handed the man her phone, money, and told him what to say. The years that followed only got worse. Hannah was accused of trying to push another girl named Kelly off a ledge. She denied it again, saying it was a misunderstanding. She claimed Kelly overreacted, but Kelly insisted Hannah had done it on purpose out of jealousy. Hannah moved to Minneapolis later, and her life spiraled into drugs and dangerous behavior. She became obsessed with a man named Dan. She spread lies to his girlfriend, manipulated friends, and pretended Dan was secretly in love with her. She tricked people into believing they were together, even impersonating his voice on phones. One day I learned she had nearly killed one of her roommates with a hero overdose. The roommate had been clinically dead before paramedics revived her. Hannah told the police she was suffering from temporary psychosis and avoided prison by going to rehab. She excused it as just another accident. I began to realize she had a condition called erotomania, the delusional belief that someone is secretly in love with you. Hannah had built an entire false reality around Dan. She became more erratic, showing up uninvited at my apartment, once even pulling a purple revolver out of her purse and claiming it was for protection. Eventually, I received bizarre anonymous calls, three-way conversations where men yelled at me for supposedly hurting Dan. It became clear Hannah was impersonating me and manipulating him, just as she had with Julie years before. Finally, I cut all ties. She stalked me, screamed at my door, then claimed Dan had killed himself. That was the last time I saw her. I changed my number, moved, and cut off old friends so she couldn't find me. Hannah from Indiana, if you're out there, let's never meet again. Story 18. When I was about 20, I had just gotten out of a relationship and was testing out dating apps. I matched with a guy named Alex. He wasn't my usual type, but his profile looked normal. In school, had a job, a car, friends. Nothing about him seemed odd, so when he showed a lot of interest in me, I agreed to meet up. He picked me up for what he called a driving date. Basically, we just sat in his car and drove around for hours. Not the smartest choice on my part, but I was young and naive. From the moment we got on the road, he blasted music at full volume with the windows down, screaming the lyrics out into the street. People stared as we drove past, clearly annoyed. But when I pointed it out, he just laughed and said, "Nah, everyone loves it." They definitely did not. After about 40 minutes, he pulled into downtown, parked outside a famous landmark, and without saying a word, got out of the car and lay on the ground, just staring up at the tower. Then as quickly as he dropped down, he jumped up and said, "Let's get some food." The whole thing was bizarre. Instead of stopping nearby, he drove two cities away, adding hours to our date. On that drive, he suddenly started spouting racist nonsense, then shifted into talking about how depressed he was. Out of nowhere, he asked me if I'd ever hurt myself. He told me he'd been hospitalized for it before. We had only known each other for a few hours, and the intensity of the conversation was unsettling. Worse, I was stuck, in his car, far from home, and he had my address. I decided the safest option was to play along and not upset him. We eventually ate dinner, and at least he paid. But on the way back, he took long detours, stretching a one-hour trip into three. By the time we were close to my city, it was late, around 11:30 at night. That's when things got even scarier. He sped into a dark neighborhood, flying around sharp corners. I asked him to slow down, and he turned to me with a blank expression and said, "You know, I've had some really hard days." Trying to keep him calm, I said, "I know. You told me." "I'm sorry," he replied. "I used to hurt so bad that I'd drive like this and kill squirrels, just so something else could hurt as much as I did." I froze, hearing that in the middle of the night, while trapped in his car, terrified me. I asked carefully if he still did that, and he said, "No, not anymore." I didn't believe him, but I didn't dare push. We were finally nearing my neighborhood when he asked if I had ever been to a certain park nearby. I had, but even if I hadn't, I would have lied, because it was down a cliff, pitch dark, and completely deserted at night. Of course, he turned toward it anyway. The parking lot was empty, with just a few dim streetlights, and the moment he parked, I thought, this could end badly. While we were there, he forced me into kissing him and got handsy, ignoring the fact that I was pushing him away. Thankfully, it didn't escalate beyond that, and eventually he drove me home. The second I walked through my door, I blocked his number and every account he had. I often think back on that night and wonder, did I actually go on a date with a psychopath? Story 19. I met this guy during my freshman year of high school. The first time I noticed him was in gym class, where he was standing with my ex but looking pretty uncomfortable. I asked him if he wanted to walk laps with me, and he agreed almost immediately. From that moment, he started talking trash about my ex. I brushed it off since my ex was known for being nasty anyway. After a couple of days of light flirting, I asked him out, and he said yes. At first, everything seemed normal. During those first few months, things were fine, though there were some moments where he seemed a little off. He would be blatantly rude to teachers and other students, but I ignored it. He often complained about how terrible his home life was. I was shocked when I finally visited his house and discovered it was actually one of the nicest houses in town. Later, when his family was supposedly struggling to pay bills, I even raised money for him, but he didn't seem grateful at all. Over the last few months of our relationship, he began treating me like I was stupid. I told myself I'd give him a month to change his behavior, but the final straw came when my grandmother passed away. He showed no care whatsoever, and instead he got mad at me for being upset. That was the moment I knew I had to end it. I dumped him a week later, but he didn't take it well. He came to my house unannounced, demanding a hoodie he had left there. I explained that I didn't know where it was because my mom had been stress cleaning after my grandma's death. My dad told him the same thing, but he was furious. He yelled that it was my fault for not responding to his texts. Then he began spreading rumors that I had cheated on him, that I had treated him badly, and even went as far as body shaming me in front of others. It was only later that I remembered something he had once mentioned about our very first encounter. I hadn't thought much of it at the time, but he claimed he had planned our meeting months in advance. He admitted he had spent an entire summer shaping a personality he thought I would like, learning about my interests through mutual friends, and then molding himself to match what I wanted. The real nail in the coffin was when he told one of my friends, point blank, that he didn't feel empathy for anyone. I dated him for 7 months. I stayed at his house. I even slept in the same room as him. And only afterward did I realize I had been with someone who might not have felt anything for me or for anyone else. Story 20. I am a 29-year-old man, and I am divorcing my 28-year-old wife. About a month ago, I officially served her with divorce papers, and ever since then, she has been spiraling out of control. In the process, I have uncovered countless manipulative actions she carried out during our entire relationship. 8 years ago, when I first tried to break up with her, she lied and told me she was pregnant. The very next day, we got married because of that lie. Later, she faked a miscarriage to keep me from realizing the truth. This has been the most emotionally devastating revelation of my life. For years, I mourned the death of a son who apparently never even existed. I grieved every year, commemorating a child who was never real. She used this false grief and supposed depression as a weapon to stop me from leaving her. A few years later, when I tried once again to divorce her, she lied about another pregnancy. That time, she went as far as getting pregnant with me afterwards to reinforce her story. Her reason for all of this manipulation? She said she knew I was gay, but claimed it was her Christian duty to keep me in a straight marriage, no matter what it took. After our second child was born, I quietly had a vasectomy and never told anyone. Now she is claiming that I somehow got her pregnant again and is even accusing me of assault during this so-called pregnancy. The truth is, we have not been intimate in years. Based on strange mail I received and information from one of her friends, I suspect she may have tried to use sperm samples I had frozen in the past. I don't even know if that is legally or medically possible for her to do without my consent, and I have no idea whether this new child will somehow be considered mine. I feel completely lost about how this situation could impact custody, child support, and the divorce proceedings. To make things even worse, I cannot understand how she even discovered my vasectomy or how she might have gained access to any of my personal medical information. Her obsession with controlling me feels endless, and yet none of this is stopping the divorce itself. It is only making it drag out longer and become more exhausting.
Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here, and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance, and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals, and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.